Somehow, someway, we are 1/4 of the way through this Indiana Pacers season. Lots to talk about. They've been surprising. The rookies have been great. Miles Turner's been great, and yet still a lot of areas for growth. So Kevin Bowen's going to join me today from 1075, the Fan, the Pacers flagship radio station, and, of course, his own show, Kevin and Query, in the morning here in Indianapolis to talk about the first quarter of the Pacers season and where they can grow going forward. All today on the Locked On Pacers podcast.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and SI, and today it is officially 1/4 of the Pacers season done somehow. Feels like it only started a month ago because it really did. It started a month and 13 days ago. But here we are, 1/4 of the way through the Pacers season, really half a game over that. And there's a lot to talk about with this team and their season so far between exceeding all expectations, including my own significantly. Miles Turner finally becoming the player he's always said he could be. They still suck at defense. There's still a lot of questions about them. There's a lot to get to. And there's no better person to do that than statue salesman in 1075. The Fan radio host Kevin Bowen. Kevin, have you figured out where the statue is going to go? For those who don't know, Kevin's bit with Benedict Mather and has built the statue already after, I think it was after Summer League, you were already all over it. So what's the deal with this?
Yeah, honestly, it might have been the night of the draft. I feel like maybe around that skating rink area. I know there's a lot of construction just north of Cambridge Fieldhouse right now. So maybe at the All-Star game can kind of unveil it in 2024, whenever that
second,
is. So.
In his second season.
Yeah, you might as well get a head start on things. By the way, I feel like I say this, but I just want to reiterate it. I love how you intro the podcast. You're a part of my morning routine each and every morning, and I feel like I'm just kind of waking up and a little groggy. And as soon as you bring us in like that, I speak for all listeners, I'm locked in and ready to go.
It's my job to yell welcome in every day. My girlfriend makes fun of me for it sometimes, but you know what? If I break the consistency, I'll feel like I'm doing a disservice to people. Well, Mathurin's a good place to start, actually, because he's been amazing. I mean, I don't know if I've seen it. From the Pacers' perspective, they've never seen a rookie this good. In the NBA in general, you know, Banchero on a per-game basis may be better this year, but for the last decade, he's one of the best, like, five starts ever. It's been ridiculous, and that has been, to me, Haliburton as well. I don't know, both of those guys. Both of those guys being so good is a big part of why they're so good. But Mathurin has exceeded expectations by so much to me. He just won Rookie of the Month for October and November, like by a landslide for the Eastern Conference. That's a big reason the Pacers are so good to me, is that they went from having this guy that they're bringing off the bench that I don't even know how good the Pacers thought he'd be. I think they thought he'd be good, but rookies typically are, you know, at most a slight positive. It's like, oh my God, this is our, you know, third, fourth best player. I think that's been a huge part of the reason this team has surprised everybody so far.
Yeah, and I would say two things that probably stood out to me the most, Tony, is his ability to bounce back from halves, from games. I mean, we saw it, I guess, a little bit, the Clippers to the Lakers game. You know, all the hype, he had to circle that one on the calendar, and his LeBron comments and all of that, and doesn't play great at Sunday afternoon against the Clippers and comes back and was outstanding against the Lakers. So that's probably one. And then just his willingness to drive and finish at the rim and get to the foul line. We did not see that at Arizona to this level. And I get it. He's probably asked to do some things, and spacing at the NBA level is always much better than it is in college. So that helps. But those two things, man, you know, I felt like he had a high level of athleticism and, you know, thought he could shoot it, and was very, very high on him coming out of Arizona and really wanted the Pacers to draft him. But I'd be lying to you if I thought, you know, when he hits a rookie wall, you kind of expect them to hit it for a couple weeks or a month. And his walls are like a half or one night. And then again, he just puts his head down and attacks. And he's got some amnesia to him, which I think is critical to not worry about what happened on the previous possession. And, you know, when you talk about this rebuild and the amount of pieces you need three big pieces in my mind. And I think with Haliburton and Mathurin, I think you got two of the three. And I don't think that's hyperbole to say on December 1st. Again, finding that third one is still really, really important. But I think you got two of the three. And that's a huge step forward, obviously, from where they were in, you know, February 1st of this past year.
Yeah, to have two of the three that fast, I mean, I don't even know what they thought. You know, it would take less than 10 months for that to happen.
And, you know, they obviously believe in the guys. They picked them and traded for them. But the level of which both of them have been this season has been incredible. And with Mathurin specifically, I think you nailed the thing that stands out to me the most about him. And you listen every day. You know, I've talked about this. But, you know, the ability to, in one game or even in one half or whatever, to go, okay, I'm being guarded this way and I can't score on that, so I need to do this instead. Like, it takes some guys years to figure out how, like, to break certain types of defenses or certain coverages. He can figure it out, like, in one game or in one quarter, like, how he needs to adjust to be so good. And that's why he has all these crazy third quarters and, like you said, can bounce back so well and can be adjusting to various coverages. That really impresses me. Obviously, the getting to the foul line thing is completely ridiculous. Like, I think that the funniest thing is Halliburton saying in camp, you're not getting to the line that much. And he does. So just shutting that down right away and putting it all together right away. Like, I like the amnesia term you used. I haven't used that one myself yet because, you know, rookies are up and down, but he gets the line so much. He's got such a high floor. Like, doesn't matter if he has an off night. He's still going to get you 15 to 20 because he's getting to the line so much. And it doesn't matter if he had a bad game the day before. He's going to keep playing his way. His confidence is always exactly the same. And sometimes that can be a detriment for rookies, but for him, it's been such a huge positive and a perfect pair with Halliburton as well.
Yeah, and, you know, something I think I'm curious about moving forward is, you know, if and when he enters the starting lineup, I assume that'll happen. You know, how does he react to that? If they do move Buddy Hield, you know, it's not like he's out there, you know, exclusively with Buddy or anything like that. You know, he's obviously getting a lot of second unit minutes, but I think that takes away a nice weapon when you do see him in the fourth quarter with that group in terms of spacing the floor. And, you know, I know you're not asking directly about him, but, I mean, I throw Andrew Nembhard into the group, Tony, that I've been really impressed with as well. You know, I watched a lot of Gonzaga, and they just never asked him to do what he has done here with the Pacers. You know, I thought kind of poor man's Brogdon, but, you know, really poor man's Brogdon. Like, I think a healthy Malcolm Brogdon is a pretty darn good basketball player. And I kind of look at Nembhard and think, you know, he has some similar attributes to that. But, I mean, to get the biggest defensive assignment on a rather routine basis, end-of-game situations, and then, again, to have the knack to – I know we see the highlight in LeBron's face. I mean, you watched that game, Tony, the other night. He made a lot of plays in the fourth quarter, not just that play. And there was a preseason game that I think the Pacers came back and won in the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken, or came really close to winning. And Nembhard and Mathurin made so many plays. And I remember sitting there thinking, you know, is this early October or is this a glimpse into what could be there? And, you know, sorry to be redundant on the puzzle piece analogy, but while you need three of them, you also need other pieces to the puzzle. And if you would have told me again on December 1st that I'd feel confident in saying Mathurin is definitely one of the big pieces and Nembhard, I think, can be a great complementary piece, that's a huge, huge step. There's so many steps in this rebuild. But that's a really big part of it.
Yeah, yeah. I talked about this already, but like even Nembhard alone right now looks like already a solid return for Caris LeVert. Like that already is impressive with the 31st pick. And he was a nominee. I am double checking. Yes. He was a nominee for Rookie of the Month for October, November in the NBA. The other guys were all lottery picks or better, top 16 picks or better. And then there's Nembhard, who's a second rounder. Like the way he's able to, the chameleon word, I think Eddie Garrison was the first one to say that. And now it's spread everywhere. Shout out to Eddie Garrison for that one. But is perfect for him because he can defend the best player and he shoots really well. He's over 40%. Like doesn't matter. One, two or three, any position. Great. Perfect. He can do it. And so, yeah, that alone, those two skills, like a 3-and-D wing size dude, even though he's probably a guard, you need that on every good team. So yeah, both rookies have been awesome. And the fact that they're serviceable, can play them everyday kind of players. In fact, both probably starter level, if we're being honest, has been a big reason this team has exceeded all expectations. And yet we're beating around the bush because they have an all-star, maybe all-NBA. I haven't really dug into the top six guards in the league on their team right now in Tyrese Halliburton. I thought Tyrese Halliburton would be an all-star pretty soon. I talked about that a lot in the offseason using Mark Price as a statistical comparison, but he's there now. I mean, last night, Rick Carlisle was calling him before the game a basketball genius and likened him to some of the other guys he's coached, like Jason Kidd and Luka Doncic. Like, and he's not as good as Luka or, you know, Kidd at his best. But that sort of analogy sort of sums up everything about what's made Tyrese Halliburton stand out so much to start the season. It's like, no matter what coverage is thrown at him or, well, I guess the Kings figured something out last night, but most coverage is thrown at him, most lineups he's a part of, he can tear it up in the clutch. You know, he knows what's coming and how to get his teammates going. And every guy who plays with him is having a great season or a career season. Guys who have stuck around. Turner is the biggest one, but there's others as well who play with him. Their stats go up or set, you know, Batadze, all those guys, even though their minutes are much more limited. Like, you know, he is just brilliant. And it's weird because the point guards they've had before have been good, but not talented passers. And you can really see how much that element, being able to make everyone else really good and also score at a high level, makes him and the team so threatening on offense.
You know, his ability to find that balance between being like facilitator and score is really, really impressive, especially for a guy that, again, wasn't asked to do that necessarily at Iowa State. And even with Sacramento, of course, you know, he played second fiddle, third fiddle a lot of times to what Sacramento had in the backcourt with their own rebuild. I mean, his basketball IQ, I mean, I think we've been blessed in this market to see a lot of high, high basketball IQ guys. I mean, Halliburton has got to be, if not at the top, right up there with any of them. Just the innate play he made to end the game the other night, I mean, that was special. How many guys panic in that moment? I mean, they were only down two. It's not like they needed a three. He could have just shot it right away. He could have done a number of things. And for him to kind of retell it afterwards, and I don't care if he saw the replay or not, just for him to kind of go through all of that and not panic, because we watched end of game situations last year. This team stunk in the final yeah. you know, four yeah. minutes, 3 minutes of games. And I remember you and I had this discussion in the offseason, Tony, of like, can this team take a jump? And I felt like end of game situations was arguably the biggest area where they could. Sure, there's an element of luck, but again, Halliburton, I think just being used to getting in more of those situations is so critical moving forward. When you watch the end of the game the other night against the Lakers, of him and Nembhard and Mathurin, you get used to that, you get confidence, that's huge. And again, he walks that plank so well of facilitator, score, facilitator, score. And you can't sag off him because he can make you pay. And then when you cheat up on him a little bit and you play him like he's a scorer, he can find the right guy. And I'm a big believer in, like, I'm a big Notre Dame basketball fan, hence my hat there. Mike Bray always uses a phrase that he feels like his program is a culture of passing. And I feel like with Halliburton, there's a culture of wanting to make the right play. And McConnell and Nembhard, I think, help out in that area. But I just think guys feed off that. Guys realize if they do the right thing, there's a really good chance this point guard's going to find them. And again, it helps when your second unit has that as well. And I love how he's wired. I was fortunate a couple weeks ago now, or maybe it was last week now that I think about it, to do like the Thanksgiving buffet giveaway, or basically serve food to the homeless. And Halliburton was the one that was the Pacers' kind of front-facing guy over at Gainbridge Fieldhouse for that. And I served food with the Halliburton family. I mean, what a great group of individuals, of people that just seem so happy that he's here and really believe that this could be a long, long-term thing. And I mean, not to get too big picture here, but that's part of the reason why I fell in love with Mathurin in the draft process. I felt like he was wired to where this could be a permanent thing. And I know Halliburton didn't necessarily pick being here, but I think he's felt the love.
Hey guys, one short little break here so I could talk to you about betonline.net, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. You can get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from football to basketball to soccer and esports. They've got it all over at betonline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, you bet, you can find those at BetOnline as well. They are the fastest and easiest way to get in your betting fix and check in on all your favorite sports. Lines are up for football this week. Bears, Packers, a big one. Packers favored by 3.5, for example. Lions and Jags, and a game that very few people would care about, is an even spread. And Cowboys, Colts, of course, Cowboys favored by 10. All that and more at betonline.net. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more, because BetOnline is where the game starts. Yeah, they have restricted free agency to dangle over both of them, which is why them being so good right now is so big for a franchise that can't lure in those kind of talents normally. And everything you just said about Halliburton, spot on. The clutch play thing is so funny. Like, I've been thinking about this more this year. You know, last year's team had good players. Like, that team made the playoffs with most of that core. But, you know, I talked about this a lot. They didn't really know their identity, and they weren't elite at anything. So when the game got really slow and either had to get a stop or score. They didn't know like what to do. This year's team, it's very obvious what they're very good at. So when clutch time comes, they're ready to respond in that way. And Halliburton's the leader there. And I talk about this, and I use the Giannis as the analogy most of the time. But like, if your leader's doing something, everyone else on the team will follow suit. And Halliburton works his tail off in the clutch and is a brilliant offensive player who passes, and they all pass and make it a good team camaraderie environment. That said, Kevin Bowen, they've lost three of their last five. Some warts are appearing. Not everything is great in Pacerland. Things are fantastic considering expectations before the season and that they have two future stars who are under 23 years old. But they are only 12-9. That's pretty good. Where do you feel like they need to grow the most in the next quarter of the season throughout the growth of this core in general? I mean, defensively is a big one, but you could talk about that or anything really. Where do you feel like this team needs to take their next steps forward?
Well, I'd love to see more consistency from Jalen Smith. You know, last night he was the only bright spot. And he's had a few of those moments this season where it's like, wow, you absolutely love what he's giving you. I'd like to see Isaiah Jackson stay healthy and also provide more consistency. And I single those two guys out, Tony, because, you know, and I know you don't want to get into this, and I don't necessarily want to, but you have to acknowledge the elephant in the room. If Miles Turner is not willing to sign a contract extension on February 1st, you have to trade him.
100%. We'll talk about that. That is on the itinerary for today. Don't you worry.
All right. Well, I will stop there. But I bring up those two guys because that is a huge question for this team moving forward of, yes, you know, what's the future look like in the front court? So those are two names that I keep on coming back to. You know, obviously, I'd like to see Duarte get back and healthy. You know, he had a poor start to the season, was great in Brooklyn, and then he gets hurt the next outing. So, you know, what does he look like? Because I do think Neesmith has been a little Jekyll and Hyde at times. You know, we almost forgot about Duarte, I feel like, for a couple of weeks. And he has been out for, you know, nearly a month, probably by the time he makes his return, or, you know, maybe even more than a month. So he's a guy that, you know, again, going back to the puzzle analogy, I think he can be a piece. I don't think he's necessarily a major piece, but he's an important guy for you. And you invested a lot in him in drafting him, you know, 13 overall. So those are probably a couple areas. I mean, I'm not overly hung up on the record. I mean, if you'd asked me at the start of this Western road trip what happens, you know, I don't know if I would have said more than two or three wins, and it's certainly looking like that. I do think you're disappointed in the 12 quarters they've played so far at West.
For sure.
Hell, they've been outplayed in 10 of them probably. So that is disappointing. But
you can go back to the Minnesota game, right? Like they were awesome in the fourth quarter against Brooklyn, but like in the last week and a half, they've played 2.5 good quarters basically.
And I do think Carlisle's been very outspoken about, I mean, we've got some breaks schedule-wise, and that's about to change. So I do think that's important. And again, I don't think that's the end of the world. I think most fans realize big picture water was going to find its level. But still, you want to see them play a little bit better just in stretches within the past week. But again, individually, Isaiah and Jalen and then Chris Duarte in the backcourt.
Yeah, Caitlin Cooper nailed the word for talking about a lot of those young guys before the season of it's the season of discovery, right? What do you have with all these non-Mather and Halliburton young guys? And so for me, the discovery was which one of them steps up to the point that you go, okay, you are a part of our puzzle, to use your analogy now, right? Nembhard, so far, it's been a quarter season of his first year. Like, yes, that's one. Everyone else, I mean, Isaiah Jackson's probably there, right? He looks really good most of the time. Everyone else, it's kind of like, maybe, right. You know, I don't know. And so they have a lot of blank slate, and that's not a bad thing. You know, they love optionality, flexibility, whatever word you use, whatever word Kevin Pritchard feels like using that day. You know, they love that stuff, and that's very good in their situation to have it. But also you'd like to know what your holes are, who your core guys are. You know, I looked like Duarte was going to be that. And then, you know, I'm not going to write him off because of an 8-game sample, but like that was really bad. And Neesmith's up and down, Smith's up and down, Jackson's in a down stretch right now. Like all of it is rough. And the one guy who's really stepped up and been like, hey, look, that's a good fit talent wise is on an expiring contract. And you said it already with Miles, you know, the trade might have to happen. So it's like, they haven't really figured that out. I think that is one thing that in the next quarter of the season, you'd like more answers if you're the team, especially because the trade deadline is just after the next quarter of the season ends. To me, though, defense is the thing that their defense is better now. Like, I think they were 13th in the league going into that Kings game, which I was like, what? How are they 13th in the defense? They were defending really well in November, but you already nailed part of it. Even Carlisle said at the schedule, they played some miserable offensive teams. you know, getting Orlando twice and Houston and Minnesota and the Heat without all their stars and the Raptors without anybody. Like, I could go on and on. That helped. They're on a 16th now because they just gave up 137 to the Kings. I think they found some things that work for them. Turner's been playing well on that end and things like that. And, you know, Nesmith and Nembhard being out and in and out kind of hurt there. But they're not good at the point of attack, and they give up a ton of points in the paint, one of the highest in the league. And so they have got to work on a lot defensively, staying in front of guys. They give up the 27th most two-point makes in the league, and a lot of those are right at the rim because they just get blown by all the time. Defense, a big, big, big concern to me for them right now, because I don't think they have Nembhard's done well in stretches, like we already talked about. Duarte, same deal. But I'd like to see more from them on that end of the floor if they're going to be the team they want to be, that is winning postseason series.
Yeah, and I guess they could, you know, get into the future of what that third piece would look like. A big wing defender is probably what that is in my eyes, in my vision. That's really been lacking. And, you know, to be frank, it's probably been lacking, you know, since, I don't know, was Thaddeus Young like a multi-month stopper of some of those guys at one point? I mean, you haven't had that in a while here.
What's CJ Miles doing? What's CJ Miles up to?
Right. Gosh. Talk about a neon green light there. So I just think that's a concern. And like you said, Tony, spot on. The point of attack, as soon as those guys get beat off the dribble, I mean, it looks like me just praying for help and yelling help, and you're in full scramble mode, and naturally you get exposed, and then you expose Miles at the rim, and that exposed the weak side for offensive rebounds, putbacks, and that's just a recipe for disaster. So, you know, some of the perimeter guys, Nembhard and Nesmith, you know, again, what does a healthy Duarte look like on the defensive end of the floor? You know that Haliburton and Hield are probably going to be liabilities. And Mathurin, you know, you would love to see a little bit more from him on that end, because I do think he's got the attitude of a good defender, and he's got some blessed with some really nice athletic gifts. But that is something that I think, you know, you talk offense, defense, that perimeter defense would probably be the calling card that's been an issue for this team for years now. And it's probably the biggest, like, team aspect question mark that you have moving forward.
Yeah, you know, Nesmith's done well at times, and O'Shea Brissett over the years has done well at times, but never the guy, right? That's been the thing they've been searching for years and years. And it always sounds funny in my head when I say, oh, they get killed by the bigger forwards. Well, every team does to an extent, but like every time they play the Kings, Harrison Barnes, like literally last night, looks awesome, like awesome. They do not have a guy for that. And Harrison Barnes isn't good enough that he should kill you every single time that you go against him. Norm Powell, OG Anunoby, you know, you could go on and on with guys. They're good. They're good players. I'm not trying to belittle their talent. It's just they shouldn't be consistently hanging 20 plus on you every time. And they have to get better at the point of attack one, but they need that body too. And that's a piece that is not yet on their team to me. So next quarter of the season, or even the rest of the season, you can take this whatever direction you want. What do you want to see next in the growth department from this team?
Yeah, you know, again, some of those individuals earlier defensively, I think we've hit on a lot there. I've got a little bit, you know, not a little bit, I've got a lot of an affinity for Mathurin, and just, you know, can he keep it up? And what different is in his repertoire? You know, when you think about it, one of the things I loved about him when he came out of Arizona is I felt like he was a great combination of really skilled and could help you out right away, but also super raw in some areas. And again, a kid that's super committed to wanting to get better. So just what does he add as the scouting report grows against him? Because it is. And, you know, I saw the Rick Carlisle video today and giving him or announcing, you know, Eastern Conference Player of the Month. And he mentioned something to that effect of like, you know, guys, more attention is going to come not only Ben's way, but to this team's way. And I think early in the year, you know, whether it was real injuries or not, you saw a lot of teams resting some guys against Indiana and probably looking at it as, you know, a bit of a pushover game. And that's probably not going to be the case moving forward. And, you know, with how Mathurin plays, I think he naturally brings a little bit of a guys want to get the best of him facing him, you know, night in and night out. So I think that is something to continue to watch for as well. And I would just say in general, you know, Haliburton probably falls into the boat now that there is more of a bullseye on his back of, I mean, he is the guy. You know, even when it was late last year Yeah, I mean, he felt like that, but it's still a new guy in Indiana. You don't know exactly what the scouting report is going to look like. I mean, he's now that here in Indiana. So as you project Mather and Halliburton into really good players on a, you know, 25-win team or whatever people thought they would be versus really good players on a 45 or 50-win team, you got to make sure that you continue to have that growth because the Pacers need that moving forward.
For sure. I think teams will adjust to them. Scouting reports will come. Like Malik Monk was just so blatant about it last night in Sacramento. Dustin Dupirak asked him, like, hey, what'd you got? You know, Tyrese didn't play well. What'd you guys do? He's like, we made him go left. De'Aaron Fox made him go left. He's way better going right. We wanted him to go left. Like, that's a really simple thing that the Pacers will have to figure out. Okay, how do they make him go? How do they get him to go right? Or if he does have to go left, what can they do to make that an advantage for them? Like, that is a big step for him. And I'm going to use that to segue into my big thing I'm watching for this next quarter is responses. How do they respond to, one, how teams adjust to them, and two, tougher challenges, right? They were 1-4, and they responded. Passed the first test. Then they lose. They fall back under 500, and they get back over 500. Then they lose to Denver. Embarrassing. They were up 18 in the second half and lost. And then they win 5 in a row, right? They keep responding. Can they keep doing that now when the schedule is way harder and teams know they're coming? I think that's going to tell you a lot about this team, their ability to adjust. Like, that's been a pro for them so far with Mather and with Halliburton, with Carlisle, who's great at that stuff. But can, you know, when the challenges are tougher, when the season is, it's January and you're playing a team that's way better than you, can you keep responding the way that they have all season? That's been a big strength for them and why part of why they're 12-9. And that's hard for young teams, right? Like, I think that this is like, this will sound so excusey. I hate to even say this, but, you know, in Sacramento game they just played was their first, like, really emotional crowd into it, stuff beyond the game kind of game. And those are hard for young teams. And they played horrible. Like, no excuse required for the team. They played awful, but, like, that was
their great experience.
It was. It was. And how do they respond to that? Like, how does that help them if they have another environment like that? Like, they still are a young team who has to learn how to do that stuff. And I think now that teams kind of know what the Pacers are, we'll learn a lot more about that in quarter two. That sounds like I'm talking like a businessman in the second quarter of the season.
No, I think breaking up, I do have the NFL breaking up seasons into quarters. I mean, you were in the building Wednesday night. Yeah, it came across on TV as game five of a first round series.
Oh yeah, it was loud. It was very loud.
Or even like a game three of where that road team is now at home and they get their first taste of it.
Right.
That's what it felt like to me. So that's the beauty, I think, of in the game against the Lakers, Wednesday night with the Kings. This team needs to experience that stuff. It's so important for them to find the balance of, I fully understand what a lottery pick would mean for this franchise moving forward. And yes, that's great. But they also have got to experience the real life NBA stuff of final minutes. Who do we go to? You know, who can handle these moments? Who can't handle these moments? How do you learn from those things? All of that is really important. You don't need to get to February and be 25 games under 500 and it's just a coast. And, you know, Gainbridge Fieldhouse is 12,000 people in it, you know, if that. And when you are going on the road, no one wants to go to those games. And the Pacers have created themselves as a team right now that they don't fall into that boat at home or on the road. And that's a credit to them. And I think it's really important to continue that because you need these guys to mature and develop. And there's no better teacher for that than hands-on experience.
I feel bad burying this, but the final thing I want to talk about from the first quarter of the season, Eastern Conference Player of the Month nominee, Miles Turner. His November, you can speak to this. Tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, that was the best month of his career, right? Like, from seeing he was awesome in November. Fantastic. 18.1 points per game, 8.6 rebounds, 40% from deep, 56% from the field, 2.5 blocks. You know the numbers. You've seen it. And that includes a complete dud to close the month last night. I mean, he could have been closer to 20 points a game had he closed the month strong. That's the best he's played. He fits really well with Halliburton and Mathurin. And yet, none of the storylines are going to be about that because of his contract situation. So, one, what do you think has made him play better? And two, how would you approach – I think you already kind of said it, but how would you approach his situation the rest of the season?
Well, I think you brought it up and, you know, hit the nail on the head earlier. Playing with Halliburton is huge.
Yeah.
Obviously, playing with Halliburton and being the solo big, you couple those two things together, your usage is just going to be a little higher, and that helps him big time. the biggest word for me with Miles Turner in this first month is consistency. I mean, it's damn impressive that he has strung these games together, because he's had the moments. He's had the walk-off interviews. Like, those have been there, but, you know, they haven't been 5 out of 6 or 7 out of 8. And he's doing that. And it's such a credit to him, because he's got to be feeling some of it. You know, all the off the court stuff and all the drama, and he's brought some of it upon himself without question. But still, for the most part, he's delivered, you know, outside of a clunker last night. And like you said, you know, in Brooklyn earlier this year, you know, as far as the second thing is concerned, you know, big picture, you know, anytime in my covering of pro sports, I've seen a player change agencies, it is an indicator to me of he wants to see what's out there. And that's part of professional sports, and good on Miles. Like, if Miles walks, I'd be disappointed if Pacers fans had ill will towards him for that decision. You know, I mean, it's gotten to a point where both parties have probably not held up their end of the bargain to that degree. And if that happens, that happens. But as a franchise, and if you're Kevin Pritchard, you can't romanticize yourself too much in this and get past the deadline and think that he's going to re-sign here and that you're going to get into a bidding war this summer and believe in what you have here. It's great to believe in it, but you can't do it blindly and all of a sudden think that he's definitely going to sign on the dotted line. So I know it's a little bit feet to the fire with what you'd be doing, but you show him that contract extension in early February and he signs it or he doesn't. And like I said earlier, I want to make sure that losing Turner would be a loss. I mean, it would be a definite loss. But you have to get return on him, and you're going to get some team that's desperate, and you got to cash in on that. And again, that would rise high up on the need list, but that's the exact plan that I believe you have to take. And I don't really know if I could be talked out of it, because, you know, I get how professional sports works, and I get how a guy enters free agency for the first time in his life, and again, changes agencies, and has, you know, very little ties to the Indy area. All of that screams, I would not want to get into a open market situation with him.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. In terms of his actual play, the Haliburton thing is a huge part of it. I think he's rolling more and cutting more. Like last year, he was a perimeter big, and that was by design. That was what their team construction said, and he never got the chance to play without Sabonis. He was hurt from January on, so he said this all the time, right? He said it on the Woj Pod this season, but even in the past, he said, I don't think I've reached my potential. I'm not scratching the surface of that. And like for a lot of people in market who've seen him put up the same stats year over year, granted in a role that he didn't think was perfect for him, and it was kind of like, okay, you know, whatever. But he's proven it. Like, yeah, he was more than that. He can do more than that when given the chance. I think that's really impressive. And you nailed the other thing that stands out. Like in the past, like you said, he would not have, you know, 5 out of 6 keep his stamp on the game's kind of impact all the time. He had 3 games that were worse, poor this month, whatever. 10 points against Orlando. They smoked him. Next game, 31, right? Completely dominated against Minnesota. He had 9 in their loss against the Clippers. Was fantastic. 15 and 13 against the Lakers, right? And then he just stunk last night against Sacramento. He goes against Utah and plays well again. Like, this is not something Turner did well in the past, is respond to those bad games, right? So that is another part that stepped up for him. And then to me, I have finally drawn my line in the sand on his future thing. I'm with you. Like, he's on an expiring contract. You're in year one of a rebuild. The Pacers all summer said, this is a long-term thing. We've changed our way of thinking. They haven't won a playoff series since they made the conference finals in 2014, right? To me, they have to think they have a very good chance of winning a series to keep Turner past the deadline. And I don't know if they can even be that good. And so if they think that would be enough to sell keeping him to me. If they think, yes, we are good enough to win a series. If not, I think they have to stick to the long-term plan, trade a guy in an expiring contract, and do the thing that's best for your team long-term. And you're right, like the changed agency, the fact that he himself, Turner, you know, on the Woj Pod talked about, they had to consider trading me because I'm on an expiring contract. Well, you don't have to be on an expiring contract. You can sign right now. You know, all that stuff kind of signals what the future is. So I think if they think they can win a series and they're willing to take that gamble, okay, like I'll let them try it, I think. I'll give them that grace. I don't think they can, but you know, that's their idea. But they have, short of that, I think they have to consider moving him, even though he's been so good to start this season.
Yeah, and I'll just add this, Tony. I think we have to realize, too, there's been some health issues with him.
Yes.
And obviously last season, you know, could he have played late in the year? Who knows? And the health issues are in his feet. And that's something with big guys I think you have to think about in handing out that sort of contract. So I just don't want to lose sight of that either. I certainly hear you out on how the season has looked and the ability to win a first-round series, and that sounds awesome. But, boy, it just seems so narrow-focused into this season. And unless you get the reassurance from him that he's going to be here, I think you have to move him. And, again, it creates a hole, and it creates a big question mark. And you know, we said earlier in the podcast, defense is an issue for this team, and obviously without him, you're even more exposed. So you can acknowledge all that, but still realize the big picture that's here and that, you know, so much of this is out of your control. You know, you've created opportunity for him and Halliburton helps in that area, but at the same time, you know, this is the last chance for this guy to really cash in his NBA career, and he probably deserves that.
It's not like this is like unheard of, you know, where the guy pops off and the team's good, but it's still a contract. Like this is a very smaller scale example. Like the Wizards were trying to win last year. They still traded Montrezl Harrell at the trade deadline. Like he was on an expiring contract. They didn't get anything awesome for him. They got like a middling pick, Ish Smith and Vernon Carey, I think, who's still in the league. But they said, hey, we got to get something or we're going to lose Trez. And like, again, way smaller scale situation. Beal was hurt, but there is history of this being a thing that people have to think about in these situations. So we'll see where it ends up. I didn't want to make this too much about that, but I finally made my own internalized decision on what makes sense to me. And I wanted to both talk about him and that. Kevin, thank you for the time. Tell people to listen to the morning show and follow you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, 7 to 10 a.m. I appreciate it, Tony. Kevin and Corey, myself and Jake Corey, we're on the Pacers flagship. So it's right here in Indianapolis, 93.5 on a 7.5 The Fan. And I know I say it to you a lot, but reiterate, we're lucky to have you, man. You do great, great, great work with the podcast and your coverage. And it's been a breath of fresh air, frankly, to the Pacers beat. And really, really appreciate all your diligent hard work with it. And it's tremendous detail. And I love it. So thank you for that, man.
I appreciate that. Kevin also covers the Colts. So everybody listening, please pray for him.
Right. Thank you.
Things continue to happen. And
pray for me or send me a fifth of alcohol. One of the two. Or both.
As things continue to happen with that team that I will not pretend to understand as a non-NFL follower.
Hey, Colts Vikings coming up.
Yeah, apparently they're good. I have made my internal decision that despite my Vikings fandom, if Kirk Cousins is their quarterback, I will never really dive in to the success of their season because I know it's not going to end extremely well. But I have been happy to see that they are winning some big games. They won their biggest game of the season and lost 40-3 the next week. Like, I think I've justified in my stay away from the Vikings stance that I'll have going forward. Pacers Jazz tonight, unfortunately no Gobert to make a remake of Turner versus Gobert from last year. And then they play again on Sunday against, I should know this, the Warriors, I think. Either what, Portland? I don't know. One of those teams.
I think it's Portland.
Breaking those down Monday, talking Warriors, all that stuff. The road trip will have tons of storylines. And it turns out Tyrese Haliburton has a little groin injury. He's questionable for this Jazz game. So if he misses time, what do the Pacers look like? Talk about all that here on Locked On Pacers next Monday. Thank you guys a ton for listening. Kevin, thank you for the time. See you soon.